Big news, the Optimal Blue Summit Agenda is live. And this February, we're bringing mortgage innovation to Scottsdale. Join us February 23rd to 25th at Talking Stick Resort and Conference Center for 3 days of insights, networking, and tech showcases. Explore tracks like Activate AI and Automation, Grow Your Profitability, Ensure End-to-End Results, and Tech Showcases and Training, all designed to deliver ROI. Hear from Olympic legend Michael Phelps, NBA President Bob Brokesmith, Chief Economist Michael Frattantoni, Housing Wire's Sarah Wheeler, and leaders from Optimal Blue. Check out the full agenda and register now at summitoptimalblue.com. Use code HOLIDAY for discounted pricing. See you in Scottsdale.
PennyMac recently approached the CFPB looking to standardize how recapture is considered in the MSR valuation. So as it currently stands, only one of the big four auditors actually allows for the value of recapture in the fair value of the MSR asset, which creates a very unequal playing field.
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Vice President of Hedging and Trading Client Services at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. Hey, welcome everybody. Welcome. It is Thanksgiving week. In the interest of keeping you informed, we're gonna have a really good podcast again today. A lot going on. It is a short week due to the market holiday, but still a lot to talk about regarding the Fed rates. We had an unemployment number last week. So we'll get a market update in here in a second. And also we're gonna meet with Vimy. Vimy's back, and she was at the IMN Mortgage Servicing Rights Conference. So the IMN stands for Information Management Network, but they host a lot of really good industry conferences around things related to real estate and structured finance. So MSR is a big one for them. Tons of folks at that one, and a lot of heavy hitters in the mortgage space. Vimy has come back with some just highlights of what that looks like. So we'll talk to her in a second. First, a little bit of data. OBMMI still pretty stagnant, as we know, right? Rates are just stubbornly high. Long-term rates are remaining above 6% in the mortgage world anyway. We're about 6.2 in mortgages, over 4% on the 10-year. Just still a lot of debt out there. You know, we've talked a lot about government debt, our own national debt, as well as other countries, especially throughout NATO, spending more on defense. Now you've got AI borrowing. We've talked a little bit about that. You know, all these trillions of dollars you hear that are being invested in AI, a lot of that comes from issuing, again, more debt. So just not seeing any end to the spike in the amount of debt that's put out there. So you're going to continue to see long-term rates probably stay fairly high unless there's some sort of outside force that comes into the market. But we're still seeing great volume in mortgages. 6.2 is low relative to the last couple of years. So seeing some good activity, not just in purchases, but in refis. So, you know, here we're approaching the holidays, we'd normally see a pretty painful lull in volume. We're seeing really good volume right now. So anyway, let's transition over to, I'm actually going to hand it over today to Alex and James to talk about what's going on in the market.
Yeah, so coming right over for the econ update today, I'm joined with Alex and Kevin. So what do we want to start with, guys?
Start with the basics. You know, we finally got a little bit of data out of the government after the government shut down. We got non-farm payrolls from September, which, you know, we weren't ascribing too much to, I would say. It came in at 119,000, which was really right where we left things, you know, coming out of the summer. In fact, that's a strong, pretty strong report after some of the numbers we saw in May and June, which were in the five-digit range. We're back up in the six digits. So as of the beginning of the government shutdown back in September, which, again, this is quite aged, but it seems that employment was in a steady spot headed into the late fall here.
Obviously, we've missed the opportunity of having some data come through, but overall, I'd agree, Alex. It seems like it's, you know, mildly weakening, but, you know, still overall fairly stable. And I think all eyes turn to what's going to happen in a few weeks at the next Fed meeting, which we've seen a huge yo-yo of probabilities for a December rate cut, whether it So it started about a month ago at 90%+, went down to about a 1 in 3 chance in the last couple of weeks. And then we saw some comments from the New York Fed president last week that tipped things back up. And now we're back in the 70% range or so.
It's definitely been an interesting ride there, flipping all around. It seemed that most of the Fed governors were, the minutes were coming out there speaking, saying, hey, we're kind of skeptical of this rate cut, especially over the past few weeks with the government shutdown. We can't see the data. We don't really want to go ahead blind, jump into it. But now we've got some, you know, numbers coming out and the Fed is still divided, but there's a couple of comments saying, hey, well, with the sell-off in the equity market, maybe we can let another quarter point go. So it's definitely flipped.
So in my mind, at least, it felt like, if not December, then probably January, or there would be another good chance in January. So really, you know, with these things, it's a matter of a month or so, or whether things happen. Now, this is not to say it would definitely be in January, but I think we'd have a lot of the same, you know, conversations in 30 days. The one thing that I find interesting is, historically speaking, it's been the Fed chairman who has an outsized voice in terms of influencing probabilities for a rate cut and then, you know, ultimately influencing the bond market. And it seems like, whether this is intentional or not, that we're seeing more folks on the FOMC board come out and publicly state their own opinions. And I find this pretty interesting. I wonder a little bit if Stephen Miron influenced this with his more outspoken critiques of where the Fed funds rate should be. But I think it's a healthy thing to see more folks who are in charge of monetary policy give their open and honest feedback, whether that's in favor of rate cuts or not. I've been heartened to see more of that, certainly over the last month or two.
Absolutely. I think we can all agree it's better for it to not be a black box organization and just simply be making pronouncements every 90 days or so. And I'm with you. I think, really what caught a lot of Fed governors' attention in those minutes was they started to raise the flag again on where's inflation at. And as you stated, Kevin, you know, it's, we don't know where inflation's quite at. We also don't know quite where the unemployment picture is. And so I think more than anything, those amendments were kind of flagging, even though they were from before the government shutdown, that we really just don't have the data to maybe see another cut come into effect.
Yeah. And it's, listen, I'd be much more comfortable with a Fed organization that's disagreeing, you know, FOMC board that's disagreeing pretty frequently than one who is in lockstep, you know, 90-95% plus of the time, right? It just, I think there's a lot of traps if everyone's thinking, you know, through in the same way, if there's not a sort of divergence of viewpoints within the FOMC, I think there's a strong argument that it's a good thing to have those differing opinions. And just to check in on the labor market a little bit more in detail, one of my favorite metrics that I've been tracking, especially during the government shutdown, is the new Chicago Fed churn numbers. It's a real-time unemployment calculation estimate based on trajectories or vectors that they're seeing in publicly available and in some non-publicly available data sources. And it's showing a lot of, it's not showing anything different or, you know, outside of what we're sort of picking up on with the trickle of data that is coming in. So the latest unemployment rate forecast for November, 4.44%. So hovering between that 4.4-4.5. You know, overall, again, maybe a little bit of deterioration, but also holding fairly steady.
Yeah, it feels like there's really been more of a boiling the frog situation in regards to the unemployment rate this year. You know, we began the year south of 4%. Now we're approaching 4.5, and 4.4 was the number that came with the September jobs report. So that Chicago number seems in line with the data that we do have from the government sources.
Well, it's a good conversation about what's been happening so far. So is there anything you guys are looking at looking forward? Anything that we should be expecting the next, you know, 2 weeks before December?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the PPI number that's going to come out this Wednesday. It's heavily delayed, much like the jobs report that we got last week, but it'll be a good last look at the pre-government shutdown inflation picture. I think it would maybe, you know, prove or disprove, you know, some of those comments that we were seeing from the minutes in regards to the inflation picture. So I'm looking forward to that one. But other than that, I think this week's going to be pretty quiet from a data release front. And, you know, come Monday, we'll be in December. We can really start looking forward to some of the new data that we're going to be getting. All the November numbers have been delayed at this point, but we will be getting them around mid-December.
Yeah, I think the only number that I'm really looking forward to this week is the number of servings of Thanksgiving dinner I can fit in between Thursday and to when those leftovers go bad. So we'll see. I'll report back though, in case anyone you know, wants to place any bets.
What's your favorite item before we leave, both of you?
So I've been working over the last several years on making a pecan pie that has just enough bourbon that it still holds together. Chemically speaking, we'll see how much I can put in that. I'm going to try something a little bit different this year. I'm going to go with a bourbon whip. Apparently you can get a bit more bourbon in the whipped cream as opposed to in the pie itself. So that's going to be something that I'm working on, but I really love Thanksgiving. I love really, you know, the turkey, the roasted root vegetables, the mashed potatoes. I'm a Thanksgiving guy. What about you, Alex?
I'm biased towards the latter half of the meal as well. I'm a big cheesecake guy, but I'm always a big fan of the whipped mashed potatoes as well for the main servings. No, looking forward to it. And from all of us here on the podcast, you know, we wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you in December.
Sounds good. James, you're not getting out of here without telling your favorite Thanksgiving dish, though.
I'd go stuffing. The more butter they fit into it, the better.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Another optimizer, food optimizer like myself.
Awesome. All right. Well, Alex, I think you gave a great sign off. So we'll talk to everyone in a few weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Welcome back, Vimy. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Jim. Thanks. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for being here again. So I kind of foretold it earlier in the intro, but we wanted to talk a little bit about a conference that you recently attended on behalf of OB. You were at the IMN conference. What is the Information Management Network about?
Yeah, it's a really interesting practice. It's a company that's really dedicated to hosting conferences across the, I wouldn't say just even specifically mortgage industry, but different like asset-backed securities as well. But they host many different conferences at different locations throughout the year. And of course, the ones that we typically attend are dedicated to mortgage servicing rights. And they really do, they get all of the key players in the industry out there. So it's really good from a networking perspective, and it's great from a knowledge sharing perspective, more importantly.
Sure. Yeah, I guess not everybody in our industry would be aware of it. As you said, it's not the MBA. You know, it's not a mortgage-specific entity. They kind of revolve around things like structured finance and real estate, right? So they get a bit broader than that. But it is a huge conference as far as I understand. So it does tend to bring in some heavy hitters from our industry and also from the MBA. So the MBA was present there, right? I think the economist, it was Mike Frattantoni, gave kind of the intro there. So any conference is going to have a good econ speaker. So what did he have to say? Just where are we in the economy with rates right now?
Yeah, Mike was actually part of the opening session, which I have to say was a banger of a session. Of course, if Mike is going to be there, it will be. I mean, we know that from personal experience as well. He's attended our summits in the past. But alongside him were many panelists, a couple of whom are actually Optimal Blue clients, including Vin Senner from Rate, who we've had on the podcast previously. Aaron Wade from Onity, and you know, a few others. But of course, it's really nice to see our clients up there representing. But specifically to your question, Mike certainly came with some very foretelling data from the MBA. Specifically, what I thought was interesting was his forecast on the unemployment situation. So he said that the unemployment rate will likely be up to 4.7 by early next year. So this is interesting for servicers to think about, because there's obviously a tight correlation between unemployment and delinquencies. And so with this tick in unemployment, we would expect to see about a half percentage point rise in delinquencies. And then, of course, a slower housing market environment, we would expect some of those delinquencies to actually go further down the line or further down the path into potential default. So I think it's important for our audience to remember that it is more expensive to service a non-performing loan versus a performing loan. And I think that servicing owners really need to start thinking about this and planning for this potential. And they can do this by a variety of ways. But I think one of the easiest ways is to really monitor the data, right? Servicers have access to so much data. So they can look at credit scores, for example, or look at changes in payment dates from borrowers. If you see a borrower that typically pays on the 5th of the month and now they're starting to pay on the 13th, you know, is that a sign that this borrower could be seeing some sort of financial stress? Could they be going delinquent?
Right. Some flags to maybe predict a future delinquency or a slow payer, right? That's going to start being late, like you said. And then that starts costing money because even though you're charging fees, you're having to engage in collection activities, and hopefully you don't get to this point, but you may end up in legal action. Then that starts to make the, like you said, the servicing component of the value of a loan less, which ultimately drags back into mortgage pricing, right? The prices that borrowers actually see. If folks are not as, if that mortgage asset becomes a little bit less attractive, that value is going to, that component is going to start to drop. But then at the same time, right, if we're at 4.7, I don't know, something we talk about obviously in our market update is, does that then mean rates are going to be lower because then the Fed's going to be forced to act a little bit quicker? Because 4.7 is well above where I think the Fed would like to see unemployment. So more on that if we start realizing Mike's numbers there.
Yes, very much agree. So obviously lower rates, better for our industry. But when you're looking at servicing, the lower rates are going to decrease the value of that MSR asset, right? Just because of the likelihood of prepayments. So it all comes back to overall mortgage pricing.
Yes. Well, let's get a little more granular on MSRs, shall we? I mean, that was the name of the conference. That was, you know, the players who were there were kind of getting that primer of what's going on in the economy, what industry experts think, and then that feeds into more granular detail on what's going on with MSRs. So what is the state of the MSR market? What do the brokers think? What did the other players at the conference think about this, maybe this coming year?
Yeah, I think what was interesting to note was that there really has been a shift in the character of supply. And I think that's something that we've noted and talked about in the past as well. But there has been a significant drop off from the boom years of 2022, 2023. You know, back then, we had noted that originators had to sell their servicing in order to raise funds, right? In fact, we track that at Optimal Blue. We're constantly looking at that percentage of servicing that our clients are retaining versus releasing. When you look at that, what this means is that it seems like right now we're at a point where the amount of bulk bids in the market are actually decreasing in terms of frequency. So higher volume, to be clear, but less frequent. So, and I think that's because right now it's a little bit more about being strategic than having this be a necessity, like it was in the years when lenders were very strapped for cash. It was a necessity, not so much a strategic choice.
So is it because is it just the bulk packages of servicing are larger, or is it because the servicers who are exchanging packages are the larger servicers, whereas back, like you said, in 22, 23, it was some of the smaller IMBs who retained servicing were finding themselves with enormous servicing portfolios because they had seen bigger volume than they had ever had before, and especially more retained volume because of just the dynamics of during COVID, right? A lot of the aggregator investors were paying very little for servicing for a period of time there. So folks were probably retaining more than they actually wanted to, but they had to do it to survive or just to not be kind of picked off by some of the servicing buyers at that time.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And I think actually, Jim, if we even look back prior to the COVID years, let's say maybe, gosh, 5 or 6 years ago at this point, one of the interesting things is how technology has changed and how that's actually changed the landscape of the bulk market. Because back then, without technology being as advanced as it is now, a lot of the smaller lenders, they actually didn't have access to the aggregator relationships as they do now. With the introduction of technology and APIs, it has become so much easier for lenders to sell directly to the correspondence. In fact, we at Optimal Blue, we have an API that makes this process so seamless for our clients, right? So it's just not, if aggregators are, or sorry, if lenders are able to sell to aggregators on a more frequent basis, it just means that there's going to be less supply in the bulk market.
Right. So is that mainly like co-issue type stuff, like Fannie Mae's SMP, Freddie Mac's co-issue, just where it's been a more approachable scenario, right? Where lenders can open up that co-issue arrangement along with retaining some servicing, selling some servicing, whole loan. They're able to have kind of all three of those execution options open to them in a very flexible way.
Yeah, that's exactly what makes it so easy and makes it so logical to take advantage of that. Right. And then so if we've got these co-issue partners in place with the agencies and there's all the technology to support that, and if aggregators are buying more servicing, it's less likely that they and other large lenders will be contributing as much to the bulk market, given their emphasis on recapture, which we have talked about many times on this podcast. And it's still a hot topic, of course, as it should be, given the likely decline in rates, given the passing of the trigger leads bill, which you and I discussed the last time I was on the podcast. And one thing I don't think we've covered for our audience is how PennyMac recently approached the CFPB looking to standardize how recapture is considered in the MSR valuation. So as it currently stands, only one of the big four auditors actually allows for the value of recapture in the fair value of the MSR asset, which creates a very unequal playing field, right?
Yeah, we've been hearing that a lot on the desk too as well, right? There are some investors of MSRs out there, and I think many of us know who those are, or investors in whole loan who have been particularly aggressive in their bids or their ability to buy loans or even to price loans to borrowers. And a big portion of that is they're building in a value for future recapture. They're basically saying this servicing right, this loan is worth more to me today because I can refinance it if rates go down a half point or a full point in the future. And many of the auditing firms, you're saying, weren't allowing folks to put that value on their books, thus making that asset look like it's worth less than it probably is. But now PennyMac has gone to the CFPB to maybe set a standard there and say, this is going to become an industry reality. So the auditing firms need to kind of get on board.
Yeah, exactly. I think the hope is that the CFPB agrees, of course, and then all four of the auditors will be following the same protocol, which ensures an even playing field in the space, which I think ultimately we talk about this a lot, but it does help homeowners. A competition out there, a healthy competition helps homeowners, which is what we're all in the business of doing.
Yeah. So if you can put a higher value on your MSR, you can put a better price out to a borrower. By 15 to 30 basis points is from what I understand, right? Which is a pretty significant improvement, whether it's to lower your rate an eighth of a point or to lower your fees by 30, 40 basis points. So like you said, it's not an even playing field now. Depending on who you're audited by, that dictates whether or not you can apply that additional value to your servicing book and then along to your borrower. So yeah, this would go a long way to leveling that out. And I think it would, like you said, it just increased competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely something for us to keep an eye on.
All right, good. So that's a huge highlight of this conference. So why don't we, end on another highlight? What was your other kind of favorite thing that maybe doesn't typically come up at this or other conferences? What was something that was a little bit new to you?
So there was one session that was dedicated specifically to the home equity space. And there's been an uptick in volume in the home equity space. Obviously the traditional seconds and HELOCs have become popular with rates where they are and with homeowners sitting on trillions of untapped equity. There's been a couple of things that I thought were interesting was that there's actually been more securitization specifically in the home equity investment space, so HEI. This is a way for homeowners to access a portion of their home's equity without taking out a loan with monthly payments. So a lender provides a homeowner with a lump sum of cash, and in return, the homeowner gives up a percentage of their home's future value.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about that last week with James and Alex, and it was, Yeah, kind of smelled a little bit like a reverse mortgage, but something I hadn't been aware was out there, which, as you said, you basically, you get the cash today or access to the cash. In fact, the one we were looking at was like a credit card. You could swipe and it would immediately pull from this line of credit that you have on your home. But instead of paying interest, you were actually giving up a portion of your ownership of the home so that when you sold it down the road, you would then need to give that those proceeds to the lien holder, which I thought was, that was an interesting concept. I'm not sure if it's dirty or not, honestly. So we're just kind of in the early stages of learning about some of these new, I don't know, creative home equity vehicles.
Creative is a good word for it. Yes. Another creative home equity vehicle that I had not heard of yet was a specific product that's dedicated to seniors. So the CEO of Longbridge was a panelist on this specific session I mentioned dedicated to HELOCs. And he mentioned that the average age of a home buyer right now is 59, which quite honestly surprised me, even though it probably shouldn't have, given all the affordability challenges and how we know the average age.
Right, the first-time home buyer, I think, is almost 40 at this point, the average age. So that, yeah, I guess it doesn't surprise me. You're on your 2.5-ish house and you're probably almost 60. Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. So I guess a third of all homeowners in the U.S. right now are aged 65 or older. And there's trillions of equities tied to these borrowers. So this company is really focused on serving what they refer to as older Americans. That's not my term. So anyone who's in that age group listening, do not take offense to that term. But, you know, you don't really hear about this segment of the group in the industry. And so I think that's why they wanted to launch a product like the HELOC for seniors, which allows borrowers to borrow against a portion of their home with a commitment that as long as they meet the terms and conditions of the loan, no matter what home prices do, they can preserve the remaining portion of that equity to give to their kids, for example, or for senior living or for any other necessity. The reason I bring this up specifically is because over the last year, we've talked a lot about how originators are getting creative with their products. And we've seen this most so in the popularity of the non-QM mortgage. And of course, that was talked about at this conference as well. But I just thought it was interesting that this specific firm was focused on another kind of untapped borrower, not traditional borrower.
Yeah, more creativity. You know, I suppose, you know, maybe the industry thinks more that the baby boomers are going to sell their homes and move into either with family or you know, retirement communities, things like this. But I think a lot of folks are looking to remain in their home and pass down that equity to their family. So that's great that folks are getting more creative on how people can tap that equity while they can use it, and then but still preserving for their loved ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really great. So that was the second highlight. Of course, there are many highlights, but we don't have time for that today. But I'm glad that we were able to at least touch upon a couple of them. So thank you for the time.
Same. No, thank you, Vimy. This is a great conversation as always. Thanks again for representing Optimal Blue at the IMN MSR conference. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Talk soon.
Thanks, Vimy. Okay, let's wrap this one up. What another great episode. Thank you, James. Thank you, Alex. Thanks so much, Vimy, for talking to us about the IMN. And that's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning into Optimal Insights.
Speed matters in lending, and borrowers expect instant answers. But traditional loan locking ties you to a desk, slowing decisions and creating friction. That's why Optimal Blue introduced mobile locking in our mobile app. Now, loan officers can lock loans anytime, anywhere, fast, secure, and accurate. Access your live pipeline, update loan details, run pricing, and complete locks right from your phone. No delays, no desk dependency, just instant action that enhances the borrower experience.
Unlike browser-based tools, mobile locking is built into our native iOS and Android app for faster load times, stronger security, and a seamless experience. And the best part? It's included at no extra cost for all Optimal Blue PPE users. Download the Optimal Blue mobile app today and start locking loans on the go. Access, price, lock, it's that simple.